And now it's time for Madison's Mad Facts with your host, Madison Standish.
Hey, everybody, it's Madison. Welcome to another Madison on the Air bonus feature of Madison's Mad Facts, where we look at the way things were in real life back during these old-timey radio shows. Every Mad Facts is prompted when Chrissy is adapting the old-timey script and something interesting stands out. They are bonus features for the most recent episode release. Mad Facts returned this time last year as a Patreon exclusive. Patreon Madison members get the Mad Facts on the 10th of every month. It's only $5 a month to join, and there are other Madison exclusives too. And there's a free 7-day trial. But no biggie if you're not a member. We are going to be releasing the Mad Facts now 1 year following their original premiere on the 15th. So this episode of Mad Facts is a bonus feature to the September 2024 episode of The Adventures of Maisie. Episode 47 if you want to go back and, you know, refresh yourself on it. For The Adventures of Maisie, we had to talk about the WAX, Women's Army Corps. In fact, it was during writing this episode and learning about WAX that prompted us to bring back the Mad Facts. In the original draft of our episode, the epilogue was all about them. So Chrissy decided, no, let's go ahead and really talk about them. So everybody, here we go. I'm sure it's no surprise that it was an uphill battle, quite literally, to get women ranking status in the United States Armed Forces. The first women in the military were part of a nurse corps established in 1901 as part of the Army Medical Department. However, they were considered civilian employees and received few benefits. During World War I, 13,000 women were put into active duty under the Navy and Marines in clerical positions. They did receive the same benefits and responsibilities as men, even the same pay and veterans benefits. But as soon as hostilities of the war ended, they lost their positions in favor, once again, of an all-male force, leaving any clerical jobs to female civilian contractors. In early 1941, as World War II was ramping up abroad, a push for a female branch of the U.S. military surfaced with the devoted backing of Congresswoman Edith Norse Rogers. Rogers was the first female representative elected to Congress from the state of Massachusetts back in 1925. She was elected to her husband's seat in a special election after his sudden passing and would hold the office herself until her own death in 1960. Rogers had done volunteer work during World War I and witnessed the role of women in the British Army and sought to create something similar in the U.S. In May of 1941, she introduced a bill to Congress for the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, WAC with two A's. It was meant to give military status to women in clerical roles, thus freeing up men for frontline duty. Rogers was met with a great deal of opposition, and the bill languished until December of that same year, following the attack on Pearl Harbor. With the U.S. now an active player in World War II, Edith Rogers proposed the bill once again, and in May of 1942, President Roosevelt signed the bill into law. As auxiliary members of the Army, these women still were not afforded many of the benefits of men. They didn't receive death benefits, veterans' medical care, retirement or disability pensions, or overseas pay. They had no command authority over men and, of course, earned less pay for the same rank as their male counterparts. At this time, the Navy created what was called the WAVES, Women Accepted for Voluntary Emergency Service. These women were given equal benefits to men and were considered active duty soldiers. After that, in 1943, a revisiting of the WAC model changed it to the Women's Army Corps, now no longer an auxiliary branch, but part of the regular Army. However, women who enlisted as WACs were constantly met with criticism and prejudice. While we look back on the Rosie the Riveter image of women stepping up to support their country when their country needed them, it wasn't that glamorous and was met with heavy opposition. The WACs were smeared as prostitutes for the soldiers abroad. One reason being, the female soldiers were issued prophylactics the same as the male soldiers, but clearly the double standard was these women shouldn't have cause to use them. The male soldiers also spread rumors about the WACs as a pushback to them being brought in to free men up to fight. The WACs got the safer non-combat roles, and the men were jealous. Overall, these women were considered the fringe of proper society for going against their gender roles. They were labeled as drunks and, of course, lesbians. Homosexuality in the military has had a long legacy of intolerance and oppressive regulation. World War II was no exception. However, while male soldiers were given an undesirable discharge if they were suspected of being homosexual, for the WACs, it wasn't as stringent. In the face of the smear campaign against the newly formed branch of the military, the Army released goodwill femininity propaganda to portray their female soldiers as women embodying the proper gender roles. Afraid any discovery of lesbians amongst the ranks would fuel the slander, leaders in WAC were instructed not to take action to discharge any potential lesbians unless the situation was considered extreme. It is no surprise that many lesbian women were drawn to service as WACs in the war, being able to fulfill their ambitions for important jobs outside the gender limitations civilian life offered. However, there are plenty of young women who enlisted with a patriotism to serve, only to reach self-discovery and come out as gay once already serving. One such soldier was Sergeant Johnny, that's with an I-E, Phelps. Phelps was a WAC medic in the South Pacific. She received the Purple Heart, and once she had enough points to go home, because the war was still going on, she chose to re-enlist and was deployed then to Europe. By that time, the war had ended, so she was part of the Army of Occupation under direct command of future President General Dwight D. Eisenhower. You might like Ike, but Ike didn't like the dykes. When he learned that there were lesbians in his battalion, he gave an order to have them removed. The task of naming names fell on Phelps. In turn, she stood up to Eisenhower, saying that she would be happy to make him a list, but her name would be at the top. Eisenhower's secretary chimed in that no, Phelps would be the second name on the list. The secretary, who would be typing the list, said that she would put her own name first. Phelps went on to explain to Eisenhower that his battalion was one of the most decorated in the world, and if he were to dismantle it by removing the lesbian women, he would be losing most of his key personnel. Frustrated, Eisenhower replied, "Just forget it," and the subject was dropped. At that time, Phelps said of the some 900 women in Eisenhower's battalion, she estimated about 95% were lesbian. Now, if I may circle back to earlier in the war, I'd like to touch on the Manhattan Project. There has been a resurgence of interest in this part of history thanks to the movie Oppenheimer. However, it should be noted that WACs played their part in the development of the atomic bomb. In fact, the director of the project, Major General Leslie Dick Groves, played by Matt Damon in the movie, was quoted saying, "Little is known of the significance of the contribution to the Manhattan Project by hundreds of members of the Women's Army Corps. Since you received no headline acclaim, no one outside this project will ever know how much depended on you." And thanks to writers like Christopher Nolan, the fact that women played crucial roles in this part of history will remain unsung in order to only tell the stories of the men of history. Fun fact! Chrissy, a.k.a. me, is featured in the movie Oppenheimer as a secretary. Go ahead, Chrissy. Well, I was brought in for the 1950s interrogation scenes. Story goes, Chris Nolan recognized he had nothing but men at his disposal, and he was quoted saying, "No man is going to pour his own coffee. Get me a woman." So I was rush called to set. I ended up being used as the secretary who was organizing the interview room before Oppenheimer's arrival. However, I worked other scenes in the movie as well. In one press scene, I was cast as a camera operator. When I was placed on set, Chris saw me behind the camera and shouted across the room, "Get that woman out of there. There weren't any women cameramen." Now, there is a lot of truth to that. Women in other roles outside of serving men were rare in this era. But I think it should be further argued that perhaps if male filmmakers took a moment to recognize the contribution women made through the decades, the public perception that they only existed in subservient roles might be changed to reflect reality. So instead of only showing the women of the Manhattan Project as a bunch of wives getting knocked up as sexual release for their husbands, perhaps someone telling the full story of the Women's Army Corps contribution might be beneficial. Because here we are 70 years later, and still no one will talk about how important they were. But I digress. Back to you, Madison. This certainly leads into what happened to the WACs after the war was over. Indeed, the post-war era tightened its hold on gender roles more than it had done in over a generation, and liberated women became social outcasts if they didn't return to the life of wife and mother. Many former WACs, especially the lesbians, rejected these attitudes and dedicated themselves to working blue-collar jobs. They chose to wear t-shirts, jeans, and sweaters. OMG, so shocking. In lieu of the feminine styles of the time. Unfortunately, these choices made them stand out in public, where they faced prejudice and hostility. The tough bar butches, mentioned in our episode of The Adventures of Maisie, were an identity many of the lesbians embraced, forming what is referred to today as the butches and femmes in the lesbian community. Butches were often characterized as tough or stone-like and masculine, but with one important distinction. They were in no way trying to be men. If anything, they believed they were surpassing men. The Women's Army Corps actually continued all the way through the 1960s and the Vietnam War to when it was ultimately disbanded in October of 1978. It was then that women were fully integrated into the male units, although it would take until 1994 for any women to be allowed in or near combat. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to our little bonus feature of Madison's Mad Facts. Oh, and if you remember from our Adventures of Maisie episode, my mentioning Bea Arthur driving trucks for the Marines? It's true. She wasn't a WAC, but she was part of the Women's Reservist Marines, joining at age 21, requiring her parents' approval. And Betty White, another Golden Girl legend, was part of the American Women's Voluntary Services, driving trucks and ambulances. Okay, thank you everyone who is a Patreon Madison member, but also a big shout out to all of our listeners. I know it's hard to pay to support all of your favorite audio dramas, so really, just giving us 5 stars or a nice review or sharing us on your socials means so much. Okay, everybody,